Some of you know that our youngest dog, Amelia, is incredibly territorial and that her territory normally extends as far as our yard and our house, and she only really cares about external threats. But sometimes her territory also includes me and Brady. More than once, she has gone from peacefully laying between us on the couch to growling, baring her teeth, and lunging after one of her siblings to keep the two of us all to herself. Our cat Dexter is a cat, so it doesn't really faze him at all. But Gus, our oldest beagle, does not handle it well. Sometimes we'll come in the living room and find the two of them happily coexisting on the couch together until the moment that one of us sits down next to them. And then he quickly makes his exit off the side of the couch before she can come any closer, knowing what is in store for him. And then there was the other night, when he was on the chair across the room from the couch where she was with Brady and where I was with him, when she noticed that he was getting attention from me. And she started to growl and she started to lean forward just a bit more like she might come off the couch. And instead of running off, Gus immediately turned his back toward her and tucked his chin into his chest. I chuckled a bit because I could see that Brady had his hand on her collar and she wasn't going anywhere. And I said to him, "Gus, how will you see where she is or when she's coming if you're facing the other way? You're pretty vulnerable with your back to her." To which Brady responded, for Gus, because that's how we roll in our house, "Mommy, my belly is my vulnerable spot and I must protect it." And of course, Brady was right. That's exactly what Gus was doing. Even if he doesn't need to protect his belly, because Amelia has never even come close to drawing blood, but she's made him think that she can. And that's all that really matters to Gus. And it's all that really matters to any of us, really. Which is part of what makes finding our King Jesus up on the cross so surprising. Kings conjure up images of power and might, the ability to deploy vast armies and protect the people, maybe even snarl and growl themselves to prevent invading enemies from appearing on their doorstep. And if given a choice in the matter, we're far more likely to select a king who will act a little bit more like Amelia, asserting his dominance before the threat becomes a reality. Given a choice, that's the kind of king the Jewish people would have chosen too. There are plenty of growling and snarling threats, and even a few that lunged, threatening to devour the people when Jesus began his ministry. The Roman Empire was fond of forcing taxes on the people that unnecessarily burdened them. And if one couldn't pay the tax, they were jailed, or sometimes worse. And then there was always the threat that the Roman Empire could ask for anything from its citizens. Anything. Particularly its Jewish citizens, whose ways of life sometimes clashed with Roman obligations. It's no wonder that the Jewish people, including the disciples, hoped for or even expected a Messiah who was going to come in, take charge like a boss, and clean house. A desire that has not ended with them. We too want a king, a leader, who will snarl and growl and chase off enemies, both foreign and domestic. That's why all the presidential candidates campaigned that way, presenting themselves as forces for might and power. And it's a major reason why Mr. Trump won the race. Because as a society, we have a bit of threat-based post-traumatic stress. Ever since 9/11, it feels as if this country has felt the breath of one growling, snarling dog after another, ready to rip us apart. watching people die in the wreckage of the Pentagon or jumping out of the Twin Towers in New York made us very much aware that we are not as safe as we once thought. We've lost friends and loved ones to the multiple wars that we have fought since then. And even those who have come home do so in ways that remind us that there is a greater cost to war than just casualties. Add to the mix the multiple natural disasters ranging from earthquakes to hurricanes to floods, along with the recession and mortgage industry collapse in 2008, and we're left wondering when enough is enough. One would have thought that a decade would have been long enough for us to have found some sort of relief from all of this. But the past 5 years has left people feeling even more vulnerable. People who don't have access to jobs that pay nearly enough for them to live while they watch their friends and their neighbors and loved ones struggle with drug addiction. The number of black people shot by police or who die in custody just keeps going up, and then in turn the police are shot and killed out of retaliation. Even our rhetoric has turned vicious. Racial slurs are cast about and people perpetuating violence against one another, no matter their beliefs, both in person and on social media. It's no wonder to me that at this point we would all be acting just like Gus. Our backs turned toward the world, chin tucked down, in an attempt to save ourselves from the worst of the pain, to protect our most vulnerable spots, physically unable to get ourselves to look the other way and to see what may be to come. We're hoping for someone to come and save us, wishing for a savior who will clean house with swift justice. And instead we get Jesus on a cross, ready to die, while the people stood by watching. But the leaders scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen one." We wish to hide our vulnerability, ashamed at our weakness, but Jesus leans into it. We mock and scoff because we're afraid of being exposed, but Jesus' confidence stays up on the cross, ready to die. Because that is where love is found, in vulnerability. Something I was reminded of by Brené Brown, who in her book Daring Greatly writes, "Vulnerability isn't good or bad. It's not what we call a dark emotion, nor is it always a light, positive experience. Vulnerability is the core of all emotions and feelings. To feel is to be vulnerable. To believe vulnerability is weakness is to believe that feeling is weakness. To foreclose on our emotional life out of a fear that the costs will be too high is to walk away from the very thing that gives us purpose and meaning to living. To feel is to be vulnerable. To be sad or scared is to be vulnerable. We know that. But also to have joy is just as vulnerable, because that joy will not last forever. And most importantly, to love is to be vulnerable, especially when the object of your love may not love you back. Just as Jesus found on the cross. That is the King that we have, and is the King that we need, especially now when we have our backs turned and our chins tucked, or growling and snarling in an attempt to force the threats away, to scare off whatever it is we fear. We need to learn how to love again, to be brave enough to be vulnerable for even just a second, to dare greatly, as Brené says, and enter the ring in order to be reconciled to one another. And the only way that we begin to do that is by realizing that we are already loved. You are already loved. You are enough. You are already worthy. Because God, our Creator, loves us enough to save us instead of himself, loves us enough to die on a cross, loves us enough to stand with those who are the least, the lost and the forsaken, those forgotten by the community, and teaches us how to do the same. Just as Luke recorded 22 chapters earlier, God has shown the mercy promised to our ancestors and has remembered his holy covenant, the oath that he swore to our ancestor Abraham to grant us that we, being rescued from the hands of our enemies, might serve him without fear. God is always, always faithful and will always show mercy, even on a cross. And in so doing, he has rescued us from the hands of our enemies so that we might serve him without fear, with a courage that only comes from the God who has power and dominion over every king and kingdom in this world, over every force in this life and the next, even sin and even death. The God who has already saved us so that we need not be afraid any longer.